Welcome to another episode of the Take the Shot podcast. This is your host, Nick. Alec is still feeling a little bit under the weather, and I want to apologize to you guys for coming back a little bit late. However, I did want to talk about the national championship game featuring Florida and Houston. Also, because of the delay, did get some important NBA news that I will touch on later in the podcast. But let's first start off with March Madness. So I guess my thoughts on the game, Florida, they were kind of just playing Houston's game. They were very sloppy, turning over the ball. I believe the turnover differential at the end of the first half, Florida had 9, Houston only had 2. It was a very low scoring game. Florida, for them to win, I believe that they would have had to get that game into the 70s or 80s, play a much faster paced game. Houston, they love to slow it down, grind out games. They're not the best offensive team, but they do play tremendous defense, and you definitely saw that in the first half. Again, Florida, extremely sloppy first half. I believe Condon himself had 3 travel calls, which just looked extremely odd. You'd never see that many travel calls by just one player, especially in just a half of a game. Florida was able to pull out the victory, winning 64-62, I believe. Let me just double check that score. But yeah, it was a very unusual game. 65-63. Got the right differential just off a point on both sides. But yeah, again, I just thought that Florida, they were kind of playing Houston's game and did not look good for them at the end of the first half, especially going into the beginning part of the second half. Houston was trapping Clayton a lot, forcing him to become a playmaker instead of him being able to take shots and make plays. I know there was a point in the game where I guess it was around like the 8-minute mark in the second half. For like the previous 16 minutes of game action, he had only taken 1 3-point shot, and it was just like a bad 3-point shot where he was just throwing it up just to try to get a shot attempt up. So they really made him more into of a playmaker, really testing out his point guard skills, which he did make some good plays, made some good passes, played great defense. But again, once he started taking shots, he was able to get up more shots. So around the 8-minute mark, Walter Clayton, he did get an and-one, and that really got him going. Didn't have his usual high-scoring games, but he did finish out with, 11 points, 7 assists. That 7 assists is a little bit higher than normal for him. He only got up 10 shots, which just credit to the Houston defense, really just doubling him, just limiting how many shots he was able to get up. But he was able to make some clutch free throws in the end. Will Richard really kept him alive in the first half. I know he made like 4 threes. He finished the game with 18 points, 8 rebounds. Really kept that team alive. Houston really struggled on offense. They only shot 34.8% from the field and 24% from 3. LJ Cryer, only shot 33% from the field, 19 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists. Tugler ended up fouling out. He only played 16 minutes due to foul trouble. just not a good day across the board for all the Houston starters. All of them all shot under 40% from the field except for Tugler, but he only took 3 shots, went 2 for 3. Just really looking at the game, Houston, they had control of it for most of it. It was almost like what they did to Duke happened to them at the end of the game. Florida was just able to take control at the last minute and then to hold on. That last defensive sequence, Florida, they played it great. I believe it was Sharp who was about to go up for a shot but didn't take it. So he had to just let the ball go. He couldn't touch it. Otherwise, he would have turned it over. It seemed like his teammates didn't realize it quick enough, and they weren't able to get to the ball. Florida got to the ball. Condon just dove for it, wrapped it up, and then time ran out. Kind of sad to see the game end that way. Really, he didn't even get to, I guess Houston didn't even get a chance to really get a shot up to even try to tie it or win it. But Florida did hold on. That's who I had as my national championship. I guess I did tune in late, but just seeing what they did in the SEC tournament, especially with that being the best conference throughout the year, really got to see what they were capable of. Definitely look like Walter Clayton. He's just one of those star guards that you need in the tournament. A really steadying force, brought Florida back, through a lot of times. Every time that they were down in this tournament, he was the one that pretty much brought him back, even in this game. Again, he didn't have a good game to start out with, but he got going in the second half. He got going just enough just to get Florida over the edge. Again, it was a tough ending to a game, but we did get a great Final Four. All those games are close, very competitive. No blowouts. Second time that we've got all number one seeds, with that first time being in 2008. Just really proud of what we got for that Final Four and just everyone and what they were able to accomplish. And me just talking right now, I also realized I guess we didn't really go over those Final Four games. Usually I would have done that on Sunday. But I guess I decided to wait for the championship game. But again, just recapping those games, Houston, they were down for most of the game. Duke, they didn't score. I think they scored once in like the final 10 minutes. It was just a Cooper Flagg three. Cooper Flagg did have a chance to put him up one, but missed the shot. Tyrese Proctor had a chance to keep that lead, but he missed the front end of a 1-1. Zion James was struggling to inbound the ball. It was just a tough game for Duke all around at the end. Cooper Flagg did play a great game. Definitely can't blame him for that loss. However, still no one was able to score really in those final 10 minutes. Houston just locked up, just played their best ball. Even though they did get a technical on swiping at an inbounds pass, but that's just Houston basketball, just playing scrappy, fighting until the end. And then the game before that, that was Auburn, Florida, where again, Florida was down at the half. It took a while for Walter Clayton to get going, but he really got going in the second half of that game. He had a career high 34 points in that game. Really came alive in that second half and just brought Florida back. And then Auburn really wasn't able to come back from that, but we did get some great games in this Final Four. Really would love to know your guys' thoughts about it. I know that we didn't get the upsets in the first part of the tournament that we usually got, but I felt like we did get some good games in the Sweet 16 and the Final Four, especially all those games in the Final Four just being so close. Usually if you do get like a Cinderella team getting all the way to the Final Four, by the time that they play that like first game in the Final Four, they usually just get blown out like NC State last year against Purdue, but... Hey, we didn't have that Cinderella team to ride out, but did get some good games in the end. Really excited to see where Walter Clayton goes in the draft. He's 23, I believe, which in NBA terms is ancient for a rookie. I guess Dalton Connect was, I believe he was about that age. However, he is not quite as athletic as Connect, so that would probably be a demerit against him. But interested to see where he goes. If I had to guess, he'd probably go somewhere between like 18 to 30. I'm sure a team with championship hopes definitely could use like a stabilizing force like that, especially if they could use another guard. Walter Clayton would be a great option there. He may not be the most athletic, but he does know what he's doing. He is a stabilizing force. And again, he's an older rookie, so he would be able to contribute right away, most likely. That's just the benefit of getting older rookies. They have that experience, they're able to contribute right away. But yeah, really interested to see where he goes in the draft. Obviously, you'll have the Duke guys all going before that with Flagg, Mollowach, and Nipple. But interesting to see the draft coming up. I know we also got the NFL draft coming up as well. Still waiting on Alex before we go over that, just because he'll have more. He's the more college football expert than me, so he'll definitely have more takes on that. Hopefully, we'll get back to you. Well, hopefully, we'll record on Thursday and get back to you on Friday with some of our draft takes. So I guess those were my thoughts on March Madness. But I really want to get into the firing of Mike Malone, and the firing of Calvin Booth. They just got rid of both. So on December. Or sorry, on April 8th, the Denver Nuggets decided to fire both Michael Malone and Calvin Booth. It wasn't a secret that in the organization that there was a little bit of a power struggle, or maybe not even a power struggle, just a differing of philosophies of Mike Malone and Calvin Booth. Calvin Booth wanted to build through young players, and sustain their success that way. However, Mike Malone was really focused on getting veterans, people who are just ready to play right away. And you do find that with a lot of coaches in the league, especially more experienced older coaches. They just hate playing young guys, love playing veterans. Definitely, younger players, especially rookies, have a very short leash with them. I even remember Michael Porter Jr., his first and second year with the Nuggets had a very short leash with Michael Malone. Whenever he made a mistake, it always felt like Malone would just pull him out. But eventually, he was able to build that trust. And even Christian Brown, still kind of a younger player. I believe he was a junior coming out, and I believe this is his third year in the league. But let me just check his age right now. So Christian Brown is 23, so about to be 24. So yeah, he was a little bit older coming into the draft, so maybe that kind of earned him some grace. And Michael Malone also, he was very active on the defensive end and still is. Not the greatest defender, just because he can get overpowered at times, but still knows what to do, plays great defense. Denver will have an interesting decision coming up with him next year, because he'll be coming up on restricted free agency. But again, it's just weird because Nuggets, they're I guess fifth in the West right now. I believe that they are losing in a tiebreaker to sorry, let me just check. So yeah, they're losing in a tiebreaker to the Clippers, who jumped up to the fourth. Most people would have never seen that coming. So yeah, right now the Nuggets are sitting at the fifth seed, which would put them in OKC's side of the bracket. Houston's locked up the two seed. OKC has locked up the one seed. Cleveland has locked up the one seed in the East. And Boston has locked up the two seed in the West. All the other seeds are kind of still up for grabs. But again, just going back to Denver and Michael Malone and Calvin Booth, you just don't really see a team fire. Well, I guess we said that pretty recently with Memphis and Taylor Jenkins, but just with some of the actions that Memphis had taken earlier, not earlier, before the season even started, just firing all his assistants and replacing them with their own assistants that they wanted, not necessarily ones that the coach ever knew or had a relationship with. He was kind of undercut throughout that whole year. And never really was set up for success. So it seemed like Memphis was probably just going to make that move at the end of the year, probably no matter what happened, unless they made a deep run. But it looks like they were not willing to even give Taylor Jenkins that chance, and it does not look like the Denver Nuggets are giving Calvin Booth or Michael Malone that chance. Weird to see, again, just weird to see him fired, especially since he just won a championship in 2023. Calvin Booth, his contract never got extended and was up at the end of the year, so there was chances that he would have got replaced anyway. And I guess Denver, they haven't kept a lot of their front office staff. I guess I can't say that they would have tried to keep Tim Connelly, but I know Minnesota just made him an offer he couldn't have refused. That was kind of a once-in-a-lifetime contract that we've seen for a general manager. Haven't really seen anything like that since for a general manager. I know there is, I think Connelly does have an option to get out of his contract. I guess we could see if he would be willing to go back to Denver. But again, I know that Mark Lori and Alex Rodriguez made him an interesting offer, which I believed included some sort of ownership in the team, which, again, is rare for any GM to get that. And I believe he's the only one I can ever think of that's ever gotten anything like that. I cannot think of another circumstance like that. So, again, I know Tim Connelly does have an option where he could exercise or he could get out of his contract, but I don't really see him leaving Minnesota going back to Denver. So I guess just the big question now is who is going to build Denver's future with Calvin Booth? They have traded away a lot of their future first, so they don't have a ton of first to work with. They have a lot of extensions still on the books. Aaron Gordon just got extended, and Jamal Murray just got extended. Jokic is going to have an extension coming up, and I believe Michael Porter Jr. will also have an extension coming up shortly thereafter. So we'll see if they're able to keep that core four together. And again, Christian Brown, he's also going to have a restricted free agency coming up, so we'll see what he demands there. Just with the Nuggets' like lack of assets right now, it's really going to be hard to build with that team. And really interested to see who they hire as the next GM for that team and to see where they take that. So right now for coaching, they're having David Adelman take over, son of Rick Adelman, who was a former coach for, I believe, the Houston Rockets and the Minnesota Timberwolves. So his dad has some former NBA head coaching experience. I guess we'll see how good of a coach David Adelman is. Again, not really putting him in the best situation with him taking over with only three games left. Denver still fighting for playoff position. Us not really knowing where Jamal Murray's health is. One of the last quotes before Michael Malone got fired, he was talking about Jamal Murray and was saying that if he was healthy, he would be out there. They're not just holding him out for precaution or an abundance of caution. If he was healthy and ready to go, he would be out there, especially with them fighting for seeding. They need all the bodies they can get. They definitely need him out there right now. Denver, again, they were looking to be looking to have a good shot at like that 2 or 3 seed earlier in the year, but recently had taken a slide. I guess it is also important to mention before Michael Malone got fired, they were on a 4-game losing streak. They most recently had lost to the Pacers, a game I don't think that they should have lost, but again, they did give that game up. They lost to the Warriors, lost to the Spurs, who they could have beaten, but they didn't really play anyone that game. None of their starters played, not even Brown. Jokic was out, Gordon was out, Porter was out, Jamal was out, and Christian Brown were all out. I guess with the Spurs, especially with them not being a team actually like trying to win, I felt like that was a game where you at least play a couple of your starters, you probably have a chance to win that one. And if you put Christian Brown in there, you really got a chance to win. And of course, that infamous T-Wolves game, definitely had a chance to win that. Westbrook misses that layup at the end, and then fouls Nikhil Alexander Walker. I guess I'll just call him Nah. At the end of that game, with 0.1 second left, so then he makes two free throws, misses the third one on purpose. Nuggets don't have a chance to get a shot up, lose that game by one. So right now they have three games left in the season. They got the Kings, which they absolutely need to win this game. It is in Sacramento. Then they need to win at the Grizzlies, since that is another team that they are fighting with for playoff contention. And then their final game will be against the Rockets on Sunday. One important thing to note about the Grizzlies is that they will be coming off a back-to-back. They'll be playing an 8:30 game Central Time at the T-Wolves. So they will be flying in late to Denver that Friday morning. And then they play Denver that Friday night, especially at altitude. That probably is going to be a tough game for them. Would be interested to see how the Grizzlies come out of that one. And then the final game for the Nuggets. And yes, that final game for the Nuggets is against the Rockets. With the Rockets locking up that two seed, I guess it'll be interesting to see if they actually play anyone during that game. But I guess we'll just have to play it out. I guess there is a good chance that Denver can win all three of those games, make it 50 wins, and hopefully get a top four seed in the playoffs. But again, they'll just have to play it out, and they will need to win all those games. It will be tough since they are playing with a new coach. I guess the good thing for them is that none of those are back-to-backs, as they're playing tonight on Wednesday, then Friday, and then Sunday. So there'll be a day off in between. Hopefully we do get to see Jamal Murray come back. Hopefully see him healthy, just because if they have or want to have any chance at a long run in the playoffs, even to make it out of the first round, they're going to need Jamal Murray. Not just like a hollow Jamal Murray, but they will need Jamal at 100%. The rest of the team, it does seem like they are coming back pretty healthy. Just interested to see how Aaron Gordon holds up. I know he's had a calf issue for a lot of the year that has been re-aggravated at times. So I'm assuming that he's been held out for some of these games just for abundance of caution. Just want to make sure that he goes into the playoffs as healthy as he possibly can. Christian Brown, he's a young player, so he'll still have those young legs. And of course, Jokic, he's always there whenever he can be. Rarely misses games for injury. Missed like four games in a row for injury earlier this year, and even that felt like a shock just because Jokic is always there. Never misses games, but we know he'll be ready for the playoffs. Again, that big question will just be Jamal. Is he ready for the playoffs? And I guess I'm just interested to see Denver and their new rotations, or if Adelman just keeps the same rotations. Just interested to see what his strategy is like. I don't know if he really can change much just three games before the playoffs, so he'll probably just kind of keep it similar to what Michael Malone has done, maybe make some tweaks here or there. But really interested to see what Denver does, I guess, coming up this summer. See if they keep Adelman for the head coaching position, or if he does go somewhere else. And also, again, what they do for that GM position, because with the draft coming up, they definitely have some important contracts, extensions, and negotiations coming up. So they're going to have to get someone in there to obviously negotiate those and work on all that. And again, the draft is one of the most important times of the year. Usually, I guess you wouldn't want Calvin Booth in there making those draft decisions, especially if you don't want him to lead the team. But you're going to have to get someone in there, especially with the combine and all these workouts coming up, making sure that they do put Jokic in the best possible position to continue to win championships throughout his career. Right now, it feels like they've kind of missed a couple opportunities to at least be competitive in some of these playoffs. So we really just got to find a way to keep Jokic, one of the greatest players that I've ever seen in my life, just keep him in a position to compete for championships and then just see where those chips fall. Again, this news just comes as a surprise to me. It's not something I would have ever expected. It's a team that I watch a lot. I grew up watching a lot of Nuggets games just because of Carmelo Anthony. And just being in Omaha, we used to get Altitude Network. So I'd end up watching a bunch of like Nuggets games just because I would get it on TV. Unfortunately, not able to see them as much as I used to when I was younger just because on League Pass, they consider the Nuggets, Wolves, and Thunder as all home markets for Omaha. I know Brian Windhorst has complained about that a lot. I don't understand how a team that is 7.5 hours away from here is considered a home market. I get even OKC, I believe they might be slightly closer, but still not really a local team. The closest one I can kind of understand is the T-Wolves, but I don't understand how Omaha has three home markets with us having none of those local channels and being able to get any of those games. I know Brian Windhorst has been pleading for the NBA to fix that. I'm assuming those contracts happen to deal with, like, I guess probably those local markets, so the Oklahoma market, the OKC market, Denver market, and Minneapolis market. Again, I hope that at least gets somewhat cleared up where maybe we can at least see the Thunder and the Nuggets since those teams are farther away. I guess I understand if for some reason we're unable to see Minneapolis games, even though that still is not a home market for us. Yet somehow we're still able to see Chicago games about the same distance away as Denver, just the just east instead of west. But somehow they are not considered a home market for Omaha, which I do remember back in the day I would also get WGN. So I'd watch some Bulls games there too. I do remember watching more like Nuggets games because I believe got more Altitude Network games. But just interested to see what the Denver Nuggets do. I don't know if I really have much else for you guys, just because, again, I know Alec wanted to talk draft. I don't really have much on baseball. The NBA season is still wrapping up, and everything's very fluid right now, so don't really want to get into too much else. I suppose Luka has his debut back in Dallas tonight. Interested to see how that goes. I'm sure everyone's interested to see how that goes. See how Luka reacts to going back to Dallas for the first time, especially since he didn't want to leave. Especially interested to see how the fans react, because they definitely did not want him to leave. Interested to see if Nico Harrison and Dumont, if they show up to the game, and I'm sure it will not be a warm reception for them, especially if Dumont and Nico Harrison are anywhere near courtside. I'm sure Luka will let them know how he feels, but really interested to see those games. Again, also really interested to see that Nuggets game tonight. Yeah, but with everything being fluid, I won't get into too much more on the NBA right now. We'll be planning on writing a championship tiers article, as well as a I guess I might just do like a MVP / all NBA article as well. So those are kind of like the ones I'm planning on releasing for the Substack. So that's kind of why I haven't written written for the past couple of weeks. Just been waiting on those, just because I've had ideas for those, but just with how the season's coming down wire to wire, Just really want to see how the season ends first, before I officially release those. I'll definitely start writing those over the weekend, and then obviously when they're ready, release those. I'll probably release one Monday, then I'll try to release one later in the week. Guess I haven't had as m any other ideas for articles. I would have probably wanted to write about the draft, but I really can't really provide you that much draft knowledge. I'll probably do some stuff for the NBA draft. I feel like that I can actually contribute to. But yeah, that's all I have for you guys today. Even though I don't have Alec, I will take my shot. So I'm actually gonna take my shot, and I'm gonna say the new head coach of the San Antonio Spurs next year will be Michael Malone. He is a championship coach. It definitely, I guess, we're not 100% sure if Popovich is coming back or if he will be able to come back. He did suffer a stroke earlier this year, and they did say that he was out for the season. I'm assuming, I guess, Miss Johnson has probably done like an okay job, but I don't know if that's someone that they want to keep long term. I guess I always figured that they would open it back up to anyone in that Popovich tree. I doubt they'll give it to Coach Bud. Quinn Snyder, he's still with the Hawks. I guess kind of the out there one I was thinking about was maybe Becky Hammon, who was with the Aces. If the NBA offered her job, I definitely would have. It would have been interesting to see her take that. But again, I don't know if Michael Malone even has like a relationship to that Popovich tree. But just with him probably being the best coach on the market right now, I definitely could see the Spurs going that direction. They definitely need someone long term for Vic's future, and Michael Malone definitely, I guess, definitely has experience coaching and all-time talent, just as Popovich had as well. I'm assuming Popovich, even if he doesn't coach, he'll still be involved in the organization. But having a coach like Michael Malone, who'll coach those players tough, make sure that they are in the best position as possible. Really interested to see how that turns out, but that's all I had for you guys today. Probably will make Alec listen to this podcast so he actually has something to bring up, hopefully on Friday. But hopefully we see you guys then. Talk to you later and have a good one.